everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster, along with our producer, Rosemary Brandt. Rose and I would like to welcome you to the program today for Wednesday, a very windy, dusty afternoon on tap on this March 26, 2014. We'll get things rolling with a newsmaker interview with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Then we'll visit with the mayor of Ciudad Obregón, the second largest city in Sonora. 30 minutes or so past the hour, press freedoms continue to be under attack in this country. We will talk with the president of the Society of Professional Journalists, and then we'll close out the hour with Dr. Robert Hendricks, Dr. Hendricks, the Buckmaster Show education contributor. We'll talk more about Common Core. Well, Tucson City Manager Richard Miranda met with the City Council yesterday to talk about what to do with the more than $27 million deficit expected in the upcoming budget for the City of Tucson. Mr. Miranda presented his preliminary plans to cut 92 positions and shave $25 million from departments to help balance next year's budget. Let's welcome now to the Buckmaster Show Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Paul, how are you today?
Good afternoon, Bill.
This is a pretty serious business here that you and your colleagues are facing, and I know the challenge is trying to preserve the core services, correct?
Yeah, it's a real catch-22. It's really not something I'm happy about. I have to say that I'm a little. I can't say I have any proof that anybody's acted without the best interest in the city in mind. But I think the sequence of events is poor. I don't like the idea that we pushed debt off, had a surplus, and granted pay raises, told we could afford them. This year we're not pushing debt off, and we are cutting human services. We're cutting economic workforce development, which I think is a huge mistake. We're eliminating 29 employees, and we're being told that that won't affect the performance of that department. And I just don't buy it. I don't think that you cannot cut 20 employees, full-time employees from a department, and have it not be affected. I think I'm just not buying that. So those are that sequence of events has me very, very disappointed in the process of how we got here. That sequence of events gives me a little buyer's remorse because I voted for the raises, and I still stick by them in the fact that it represented some training investment, it represented some morale boosting, it represented all these things, and we do need to treat our employees with respect and dignity. But at the same time, laying off 29 people or eliminating 92 positions and just so we could pay people more and borrowing money to do it doesn't make sense. I do have to say that the package that the manager has rolled out has some goods and bads to it. It has some tweaks. He has some things that he's left out of his recommendation that I'd probably want to take another look at. But all in all, as I said at the beginning about a month or two ago when they said this $33.5 million budget was totally tough to overcome and it was something that was going to be very, very hard, I'm looking at it now and saying, well, you know, without pushing out any debt, we're still going to balance. And with regard to the 20 actual people that exist that may be laid off, there are several different options to retain some of them in the city workforce other ways. So I'm looking at it, and it's a mixed bag. In other words, you don't like the sequence of events, but at the same time, I think that the team is well intentioned in the package they're putting forth.
Well, it's very troubling that people, I'm sure, are very worried about police and fire being cut, and especially the news today that this survey that came out showing Tucson being ranked the least safe city in Arizona by this Monvado Real Estate, a national real estate company, ranked Sahuarita, Oro Valley, and were the top two safest, then Gilbert, Florence, and Paradise Valley, and Tucson is at the bottom. So we certainly don't want to lose policemen, policewomen at this time, or fire people.
Yeah, and the metrics and surveys like that have all different nuances. It depends on what your murder rate is, your crime rate, your traffic accident rate. I mean, there's a whole lot of different nuances when they figure out those metrics. I like seeing us at the top 10 of things. When I first came on the council, we were never in the good top 10, so now we are. It's disappointing to hear we're in a bottom one. But you know, in the budget the manager has put forward, we're investing in new equipment for police cars, and we're retaining all of our police officers, and you know, we're keeping our force readiness strength. We do have to look towards 2016 when we're losing people. On the other side, though, you know, part of the community is wellness, and we're cutting 20 people out of parks. If I would have known there was 20 people to cut out of park, you know, it's so perplexing to me, because the manager's saying, well, we're cutting 20 people out of parks, and that everything's going to remain the same over there. And my answer to that is, well, then something is incredibly wrong. Either that department wasn't being managed properly, or the 20 people who were working didn't do any work. I mean, you can't say that everything's going to be fine. You can't put a bow on it and say it's going to be okay. I really think there's going to be some adverse effects there, and we're going to have to either pick up slack, we're going to have to find alternative revenue sources. But I just think there's a number of things that in this budget that priority-wise I think we could do without, you know, a little 100,000 there, 300,000 there, 500,000 here and there, where we could make up some of that money.
Paul Cunningham is with us, Democrat, Tucson City Council member, 790-2040, 790-2040. If you would like to ask a question or make a comment to Mr. Cunningham, he would be happy to entertain it. Yeah, it is a little disturbing about the parks, and I've seen surveys, Paul, that show per capita, we really are kind of on the we don't really have as many parks as we should for the amount of people that we have in Tucson. And cutting the parks, that's a problem, I think.
Well, I mean, you look at, you're thinking about community wellness, you're thinking about young families, you're thinking about folks who can't afford to go to private clubs and private open space. And also, you know, we have a great outdoor city. We don't have the greatest weather in the world for nothing. And so, you know, well, at least from, you know, Labor Day to Memorial Day. So, you know, in my opinion, not investing in our parks is probably something that we'll regret. So we'll just have to take a look at how we can ensure that the level of service being delivered to the parks is maximized. And it may be a situation where some money comes back, and we'll have to take a look at that. I got to hand it to him. At least he put the he put out a budget that didn't push off debt, which is something a year and a half ago I said I didn't want to do. I thought that pushing off debt was a bad decision, and the staff said, well, we can afford to do it this year, and it's one of those things that doesn't make a difference. We've been doing it for a while. And so that's what we were told a year ago, and now they've completely reversed themselves and said, well, we don't want to push off debt this year because it could have long-term repercussions. Well, when I said that last year, they said it was more important to give the employees raises, and I said, all right, if we have people leaving and we have training investments in the people, then obviously we need to meet that need. But I also said, what good is giving raises if we're going to lay off people a year later? And here we are looking at layoffs. So for me, it's a really frustrating catch-22, and I'm going to look before I leap, before I take the city staff's word for it this time.
All right, let's go now to Wayne on the Buckmaster Show live line. Wayne, you're with Councilman Paul Cunningham. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes, Mr. Cunningham. I think that anybody that thinks that giving raises to the people, the city workers, along with adding an extra holiday, you know, while the city is broke and doesn't believe that it would have any repercussions down the road, you know, really maybe needs to be replaced. And maybe it's the staff. Maybe you could start with layoffs on staff, because if what you say is true, they misled you. But I still think that anyone, myself included, would know if the city's broke, you can't add a holiday and you can't give raises.
Okay, thank you, Wayne. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, Wayne, it's a good point on both fronts. I think, again, when we were talking about those raises, a very large chunk of those raises went into keeping our wages competitive for police and fire. And we had a situation where we had a number of police and firefighters, especially police officers, that were on the cusp of leaving, and we had invested $100,000 into training those people. And so for me, that's a big part. On the other side, the $500,000 Cesar Chavez Day, there were several different alternatives to try to capture part of that. I think those can be out there, but at the same time, moving from 10 to 11 holidays like every other jurisdiction in town, and also the idea that Cesar Chavez's life notwithstanding, he's become a symbol to a large section of the population in the United States. There's 50 different cities that have it, and he has ties to Tucson. He used to go to Santa Fe Mission every year. He'd make the trip to Tucson every year. So I thought that it was a prudent time to honor him. I definitely would have rather saved the $500,000 off of a sick day or whatever, but we really couldn't come to that agreement. And finally, the $500,000 that goes into that is still just ends up being like $480,000 of it ends up being an extra $480,000 extra days pay for police and fire. So it makes it a good investment. I mean, we still don't have a base pay raise for police, a base pay that's competitive for police and fire. We have some other things that are probably balancing out a little bit, but we don't have the competitive wages for police and fire. So I stand by both those decisions.
Okay.
And I think at the time they were good decisions. Okay. However, I think what I'm telling you is that city staff saying that we can push debt off a year and save $13 million 1 year to give raises, but the next year we have to sweep it and we have to we have to sweep it and we have to cut all these different programs and lower service delivery. I think is they're swinging at both ends of the bat. I don't think that's fair.
All right, let's see if we can work one more call in with Paul Cunningham. Robert, go ahead. You're with Councilman Cunningham.
Paul, they've closed the pools and they're barely maintaining the parks. If you could just get rid of one of those $100,000 stuffed shirts at parks and so-called FEMA attractions, you could fund the pools. So how do you justify all these $100,000 guys if their duties have been closed?
Okay.
Well, and again, that's part of the layoffs. The 29 layoffs is supposed to lower those administrative and management positions. I think that we are a top-heavy organization, and if you go through the 371 different line items that we have, you look at it and you see these administrative and managerial positions. You see duplication in the human resources departments, where you have a human resource several human resources programs in one agency and another agency and in the whole city. So I think there's definitely some streamlining that has been done. They've eliminated 92 positions, 70 of them were vacant, but there's still 29 people getting laid off. And they're supposed to be administrative and management positions. So they're working in that fashion. However, and this is where it comes back to it, we have a bumping program with civil service. So that means that a person can, if they are one of the positions that's eliminated, they can bump down one position to what they're qualified for and take a 4% pay cut. Then they can move down, that person that can then move down a position and they can take a 4% pay cut and take another position. It goes down to the least senior person on the totem pole. And at the end of the day, you have folks with, you know, who are carrying $60,000-$70,000 salaries, were working in what could be perceived as an entry level job. So I think there are unintended consequences here, and that's why, as I said, I'm not as excited about some of the planning here.
All right, Paul Cunningham, thank you for spending part of your lunch hour with us. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Paul Cunningham with us on the Buckmaster Show. We will go down to Sonora, Mexico next. On the live line, we'll talk with the mayor of Sonora's second largest city as the Buckmaster Show midweek edition continues back right after this. widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit RTAMobility.com or Facebook. Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Jerry!
What's wrong?
The client conference call is right now.
I thought it was next week.
I don't have the presentation ready.
Okay, okay. Blame the internet. Say it went out.
They'll never believe that. They know we have Cox Business. Our internet is too reliable and is 100 times faster than basic DSL.
Say customer service is closed.
Cox Business has 24/7 support.
Well, say it would take too long to get a technician here.
No, they know the award-winning customer service is local. They told us to get Cox Business.
The call has started.
Good morning.
I forgot about this meeting. We have terrific internet.
Switch to Cox Business Internet and Voice for only $99 a month. Speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL. Get a 30-day money-back guarantee and free professional installation with a 3-year agreement. Visit coxbusiness.com and switch today. Offer ends 4/30/14. Prices exclude taxes and other fees and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Speed comparison based on Cox Business Internet 150 megabits per second service versus basic 1.5 DSL. Actual speeds vary. Limited 30-day money-back guarantee. Exclusions and other restrictions apply.
Please join us for our special program, Discovery Nights, during March at Biosphere 2. On selected Saturdays in March, Discovery Nights will offer extended hours with family-friendly stargazing and nighttime tours under the beautiful lights of the University of Arizona Biosphere 2. Also, new exhibit previews just being opened to the public for the first time. Visit b2science.org for more information and come visit today. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. The city of Obregón is the second largest city in the northern Mexican state of Sonora, which is about 300 miles south of the Arizona-Mexico border. There's a very big event that is going on in Obregón. It's hosting a four-day conference remembering Dr. Norman Borlaug. Dr. Borlaug was the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970 for his work that he did at a wheat research facility in Obregón. There are hundreds of scientists, farmers, and others in Obregón until Friday, remembering the contributions of Dr. Borlaug, and they're discussing the future of wheat technology. That conference is sponsored by the World Bank and the Mexican government, among others. Keith Rosenblum, the Buckmaster Show contributor on the border, is in Obregón for the conference. Keith joins us now from Mexico on the live line. Keith, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm eating only wheat products in the honor of this occasion. I may have, for one moment to the next, I may have Mayor Rogelio Diaz-Brown on the phone. He's been running around at this event and other things in Obregón here. If he comes on, it'll be great. If not, we'll have him communicate with you at another time. But I want to pass on to you, this has been a seminal event in Obregón and in Mexico. The Secretary of Agriculture was here yesterday. Today, Howard Buffett, the son of Warren, is here with his to discuss the goals of the Buffett Foundation. It's really interesting to see this kind of gathering in a place like Obregón, which is a farm community, you know, maybe similar to an Omaha, actually, or to a Des Moines. You have people from Pakistan, from Ghana, from India, and it's all to discuss wheat. And this is where Norman Borlaug in the 50s and 60s, he was himself as a professor from Iowa of Norwegian ancestry, and he gets a Rockefeller Foundation request and grant to come to Mexico. And basically the man is credited with having staved off starvation and having produced, and what he did was to produce the yield of wheat per acre by, depending on who you listen to, threefold, sixfold, through his study of wheat. And so all week long, you have people, you have PhDs and people from government. Monsanto itself, the seed vendor, is here. It's just a fascinating mishmash of people who are interested in wheat and in world hunger issues.
You know, Obregón kind of flies below the radar screen for those of us living here in Arizona. We don't really know much about Sonora's second largest city. Is wheat still a very important part of the agriculture in Sonora?
You know, absolutely. It is considered to be the breadbasket of Mexico. And we probably don't hear much about Obregón because it's another 3 hours south from Hermosillo. But wheat is very much all. What you do in Obregón is you have your kids go get a degree in agronomy. Whereas if you were living in Hermosillo or you're in Tucson, you might say, you know, let's go to the U of A and get somebody into information technology or into digital art or computer science. In this part of Mexico, you say, what kind of degree can I get? Advanced degree can my boy or girl get in agronomy? And you look at crops that are much of the produce, much of the export that comes from this part, and not just wheat, but also of fruits and vegetables, doesn't go to the U.S. It actually hops on barges and goes off to the Far East. And so when you go to a shopping center in Tucson and you see those license plates that say Sonora, you can bet on a good number of them being from Obregón and right near to Navajoa.
So it's almost, as you say, the Omaha of Mexico, Obregón.
Yes, it is. It's an incredibly productive place. And what was interesting about yesterday's ceremony, I was here for the opening, where would have been the 100th birthday of Borlaug, and that's why the World Bank chose to celebrate it now. And so you had a lot of his colleagues, a lot of men in their 80s and 90s who worked with him. We're actually here talking about it. It's both very personal and also very much a professional exercise. There's workshops for the next 4 days that deal with all sorts of technical aspects, hybrids of wheat, where they're best grown in the world. There's actually a couple of panels that are even, here's a panel bill called What the Milling and Baking Industries Will Need from Wheat in 2025. I mean, talk about just very, you know, odd topics. But this is the this is where all the people in the world, who's, by the way, whose method of communication is English, they may come speaking Farsi or Portuguese, but they get together here and talk about their research in English. It's fascinating to hear these. And I can't wait to hear what Howard Buffett has to say in a couple hours. He's over at one of the universities, at University of Universidad de La Salle, right now, giving a conference. But when you attract people of that caliber, you just have a world-class event. And it's something when I talk to you on previous occasions, and we get to talk about violence in Rocky Point and all other kinds of things, it's like, hey, is there another Mexico to be discussed? And the answer is yes, there is, and this is one component of it.
Well, thank you very much, Keith Rosenblum, for attending that event and filling in our listeners about Norman, Dr. Norman Borlaug, kind of the founder of the Green Revolution, and a very important occasion on his what would have been his 100th birthday. Thank you, Keith.
Thanks, Bill, for the opportunity.
Okay, Keith Rosenblum with us on the Buckmaster Show. We'll talk about press freedom around the world. That's coming up next. The midweek edition of Buckmaster continues.
The important message you're about to hear is brought to you by Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona.
Is your water hard to live with? Are you tired of water that tastes bad and smells bad too? Do you have hard water buildup on your shower walls, tile, and faucets? Are you tired of dry skin and dull hair? Are you tired of dingy laundry? What about premature replacing of faucets, fixtures, dishwashers, and water heaters? Well, it's time to do something about it, and Culligan Water of Tucson has a solution. A high-efficiency water softener that can eliminate these problems for $9.95 per month for the first 3 months rental with an annual service agreement. It's easy. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700 for complete details on this introductory offer. This is a limited-time offer, so call us today and start enjoying all the benefits and the savings of a Culligan high-efficiency water softener now. Remember, 792-9700 or visit us at arizonaculligan.com. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Hey, honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.? Well,
flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word compare to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Inside Tucson Business is your best source for the business news of metropolitan Tucson. Whether you own or manage a company, want to start your own company, or just want to know what's happening with the region's economy, you need to read Inside Tucson Business, Southern Arizona's business news leader. Read us online at InsideTucsonBusiness.com or call 294-1200 to get your copy today. Inside Tucson Business. It's not personal. It's just business.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cañada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
Devereaux, Arizona inspires hope in the lives of the most vulnerable members of our community, our children. In Pima County, there are more than 4,000 children in foster care that need your help. Devereaux, Arizona's foster care program gives you the training and support you need to make a difference in the life of a child. Donate, volunteer, or become a foster parent. Find out how at devereauxarizona.org or call 520-296-5551.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition, pushing now toward 12:35 on what will be a kind of a windy, dusty day. For those with allergies, could be problems ahead, but things are better for the weekend. Well, according to the annual Freedom Index report from Reporters Without Borders, the United States is 46th in the world regarding freedom of information. That's a drop of 13 places from 2012. Joining me in studio on the Buckmaster Show is David Coulier, president of the Society of Professional Journalists. And David is also the director and associate professor at the University of Arizona School of Journalism. David, good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
You know, I think there's a perception. When I saw that 46, I went, my goodness, that just can't be. I think there's a perception that America's would be certainly one of the top 10 best places for journalists in the world, but not true, is it?
No, and it surprises everybody. You'd think that we would be. Everybody assumes it. We're looked to as a role model. But that's the scary thing, that without that context of looking at what's going on, we could get lulled into complacency, and it's getting worse here in this country. It really is.
So why is the journalism climate getting worse?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't know if anybody's nailed down why, but definitely what the indicators are. We're seeing journalists getting thrown in jail in the United States by government all across. There's all across the nation in various forms. We're seeing more secrecy. Our freedom of information laws are in the bottom half of the world. They're really quite weak, and that surprises people as well. And there are a whole variety of indicators that have been showing a trend over the past really 10, 20, 30 years that this is going on.
And again, the perception after Watergate was that America's freedom of the press was one of the strongest in the world, and that there were all sorts of protections for journalists who were doing investigative work. But those protections generally are very weak in this country.
They really, really are. And you're right. I think the peak was Watergate. I think journalists were perceived fairly well back then. I mean, watchdogs on government, objective and fighting for the average person. Of course, that's changed over the years, and steady decline in respect for journalists. And part of that's journalists doing and the media's doing. So, you know, we share some of the blame with that.
And what countries are doing a good job of doing with when it comes to this annual Freedom Index? Who are up there? What countries are near the top?
Well, I can tell you a whole variety of countries that are better than us, such as Uganda and El Salvador and Botswana. Maybe we should look and see what they're doing. But typically the ones in the top tend to be Western countries that have well-established freedoms for their citizens, and such as Sweden. Sweden adopted a Freedom of Information Act in 1766. That was 200 years before we adopted ours in 1966. So some countries have actually been ahead of us for some time. And if we look and see what goes on in there, those countries, I think we could actually oddly learn enough.
Yeah, we've got Finland, the Netherlands, and Norway topping the list of good places for journalists to work. You know, David Coulier, I think one of the problems with not having the strong protections for journalists, I see the erosion of good investigative journalism in this country simply because the corporations that control so much of our media, they just don't want to deal with the legal implications.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. And research shows that particularly since the recession and media have been hit hard, there have been cutbacks in litigation and suing to keep our government open, and that's been a problem. And I'm not sure, you know, what we're going to do now. I see rebound. I mean, for example, you see the Arizona Daily Star sued the Tucson Unified School District over some processes of being a little closed, and they're being more aggressive toward it now. And I think that's a good thing, because really this isn't about the government versus the press. It's really the government versus the people, and journalists are just proxies for the people. And we need strong journalism so that people get the information they need to self-govern. That's what this is all about.
David Coulier is with us. David wears two hats right now, president of the Society of Professional Journalists. I believe you're the 95th president of the, or is it 96? Something like that. But it's an organization, I think, what that points out, it's emblematic of an organization that's been around a long time.
Right, right. We've been around since 1912. We're the largest organization in the country of journalists, and primarily fighting for ethics in journalism, freedom of information, and diversity as well.
Let's talk a little bit while we have you here about the young folks who you are interfacing with at the University of Arizona School of Journalism. How has the internet and the blogosphere and all of that affected this particular generation of young journalists?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, everybody assumes they've grown up with it, so they're really tech savvy. But what we find is, you know, they're really good at checking their Facebook page and texting each other. But using these skills effectively to communicate is still something that you have to learn. I mean, being a good writer, a good communicator, it takes good training. And so we've realized that the fundamentals are still the heart of journalism. People need to learn how to gather information, vet it, think critically, communicate it clearly on all platforms. And that's kind of our philosophy. And I think students leave well prepared for any job, frankly.
Well, they certainly have to be able to multitask, whether they're in the radio and television. They're going to be working with a lot of other people on a lot of different platforms. And certainly newspaper reporters, now you go out, you do a story, and it's not just waiting for the deadline of 5 o'clock that afternoon. While you're out on the story, you are working, and you're twitting, most likely.
Absolutely. You're taking video. Mm-hmm. You're sending it back. You're getting it uploaded to the website. There's this huge blurring of media now. Everybody's doing everything. And it is amazing what is being accomplished given those constraints. I know I didn't have to do that when I worked at a newspaper. It was a lot easier
My
day.
Me too. And certainly in television, back in the day, we would go out with a camera person and an audio technician, and you may have one or two stories to work with. Then, of course, live TV came along as far as live shots, and that became almost what your day was built around. So, I mean, it's constantly changing. Let's go now to the Buckmaster Show live line. We have a caller here. I believe it is Fernando for David Coulier. Go ahead, Fernando. Hi, Fernando.
Thank you very much for taking my call. One of the things that I wanted to it's interesting your observation about you said that you have nobody to blame, perhaps, but yourself as far as journalism is concerned. I think what has happened throughout the years is that journalists and the media in general have become very political. And so they have picked and they have chosen the stories they wish to report on. And even some of the stories that are controversial, I think, and I think, you know, they lean a particular way. And so consequently, there's stories that should be told that aren't being told in efforts to protect, you know, and I think that's been kind of an issue. And I think they've lost a lot of credibility in that part.
I think you're on to something there. Well, let's hear what David has to say.
I think you're absolutely right. And part of it's a form of technology, because everybody has a way of getting to their niche source that they like and reinforces their views. That's how media have gravitated towards. So you have folks who are conservative will go to talk radio or Fox, and mm-hmm. folks who believe in liberal beliefs will go elsewhere, and et cetera. And so people, by their choices of what they want to go to, are creating this media, reacting to it by developing and their niches. And so, and we're seeing this polarization in the United States, I think, caused in part by this. I think it's a serious problem, and I don't know what to do about it, because now people can pick and choose what they want, and that's going to be reinforced by the market.
Yeah, thank you, Fernando, for bringing
Very
that up
point.
Because it is a good point, and what it in effect addresses is this segmentation of the media, where people who are leaning a particular way politically may want to watch Fox, or those going the other way, CNN, Beck, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was Excellent. A good point, and we thank you, Fernando. And David Collier, thank you very much for being with us. We'll call thank on you again sometime.
Thanks, my pleasure.
Thanks a lot. David Collier, president of the Society of Professional Journalists. David is also the director at the University of Arizona School of Journalism. We will be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Christie. I've served as an RTA board member since 2009 and through last year as its chairman. The RTA continues to be a most successful regional effort, with the RTA and our member jurisdictions completing so far more than 540 construction projects to reduce congestion, increase our safety, and improve crosstown mobility. As part of the original Citizens Advisory Committee, I'm proud of our citizen-driven plan as well as the RTA's accomplishments. We deliver, we promise. Learn more at rtamobility.com.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Eagle Eye Rare Coins is Tucson's only nationally recognized coin dealer. For more than 20 years, owner and rare coin expert Rick Snow has been Tucson's trusted advisor in evaluating your coins, currency, collectibles, gold, and silver. Eagle Eye Rare Coins at 6464 East Grant Road, next to the Fort Lowell Post Office, and on the web at TucsonSilverAndGold.com, or call 498-4615.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Rug Gallery's extensive collection of new and antique rugs has earned an international reputation and has been featured on the cover of Christie's magazine, as well as many of the world's most respected carpet and textile publications. Since 1987, Tucson's been home to one of America's premier sources of fine Persian and top quality imported rugs at competitive and affordable prices. With its huge selection of hand-woven rugs from around the globe, the Rug Gallery has rugs just right for your home or the largest palace. The Rug Gallery thanks Tucson for their support over the past 26 years as the place to see one-of-a-kind, new and antique quality rugs. The Rug Gallery in the Jostler Center at the northwest corner of River and Campbell, and at RugGalleryAZ.com, and on Facebook, or call 571-RUGS or 571-7847.
Tucson Desert Art Museum. Tucson's newest art museum is home to one of the premier collections of pre-1940s Navajo and Hopi textiles, exquisite classic and contemporary paintings and photography, early maps and historic artifacts. Visualize history through art at Tucson Desert Art Museum on East Tankerville Road at Sabino Canyon Road, just west of Udall Park, and on the web at TucsonDart.com. That's TucsonDart.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion is brought to you by the New Mexico's Brewers Guild, bringing a beer fest to Silver City. That's coming up on Saturday. If you like the very popular handcrafted beers, 10 different New Mexico breweries serving up on tap that's going to be a great event over in downtown Silver City at the Little Toad Creek, their new downtown Silver City tasting room. You can find out more about what's going on in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, which is only three and a half hours east of Tucson, by logging on to southwestnewmexico.org. Full places, the full listing of places to stay and things to do, like Lake Roberts Motel and Pinos Altos Cabins. Let's welcome now to the Buckmaster Show our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, associate professor at the UA College of Education. He's the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practices, and he has taught organizational theory, human resource management, and policy at the master's and doctoral level. He is the former superintendent of Flowing Wells School District, and he is a one-time Arizona Top School Superintendent of the Year. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. How about you?
Doing very well, thank you. The Common Core is like the big education issue. It's become very politicized so far.
Well, yeah, it's the big elephant in the room.
It is.
It is.
You got the Indiana becoming the first state to opt out of Common Core education standards. There's about 45, 46 states that have adopted these standards. And where this grew out of actually a conference of governors meeting.
Yes, it's been percolating and evolving for over 4 years now. And governors and education commissioners and teachers and parents and experts around the country all embrace this idea of having a national standard around educational practices and content in mathematics and in language arts.
Well, we do not technically have a national education standard in this country, so this would be the closest that we have to that.
That's true. We've tried before, but there's always a chorus of discord when you try to nationalize something. And this particular issue has seemed to have mobilized both people on the left and people on the right. People on the right saying that we don't want to nationalize the curriculum. It's a state's rights issue, which is the case which with Indiana this Monday when their governor said, this is not something we're going to participate in. And to directly quote him, he said, we want standards written by Hoosiers. We want something for Hoosiers. And,
Hoosier core.
Yeah, Hoosier core. And we really don't want any of the national standards that some people have called developed by an elite group.
Well, are we getting a... Let's get to the bottom line with Common Core. Is it better for students, in your opinion?
I think it is because it combines two things. Heretofore, there's always been an emphasis on content. Now we're looking at content and we're looking at application of content. And I think what we've seen on the national scene, also here in Arizona, is that business leaders have looked at this core and they said, this is exactly what we need. We not only need facts, but we want students to be able to demonstrate that they can apply this content knowledge. And these standards allow that to happen. They really don't tell teachers specifically what to teach. They still leave that up to the states and to local districts. But there is a core of standards that everyone is expected to abide by.
There were some common myths that the Washington Post published about Common Core, and one of the myths was that Common Core demands that teachers toss out some of the classics like Shakespeare, that they wouldn't be able to teach particular, the classical stuff.
Well, that's simply not true. And I've seen that quote as well, and I've done a little deeper investigation. And the core standards are not that specific that toss out anything in particular. Fortunately, if we nationalize the curriculum, there's going to be some benefits. For one thing, we can develop textbooks and instructional materials that apply nationally to all states and all students. And we know that students in, particularly in the mobile society that we live in, may not necessarily always live in Indiana or always live in Idaho or always live in Arizona. But students need to have a context of standards that apply nationally. Secondly, we're going to have a national conversation about standardization of performance. So when we look at how standards are performed by students, we can look at it state by state. We can look at it district by district. We can't do that right now because we have such a mismatch of standards. And thirdly, the new SAT test that's been developed is tied directly with those standards. SAT is a national test, so why not have national standards tied with SAT?
Is it unusual that we don't have national standards? Most countries do have them.
Most industrialized countries do have national standards. So when they report the scores from Finland or Germany or England, you're going to see scores that represent the performance of students across the country and not a particular county or a district or whatever way that country is organized.
So consequently, it becomes very hard for the United States to be compared with other countries.
Very difficult. Very difficult. And also difficult to compare on a statewide basis as well. Now, I also wanted to mention that folks politically on the left are also concerned about core standards because they're saying, well, now this reintroduces more pressure on testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a no-win situation. There are camps on both sides that suggest that maybe there ought to be a more moderate position. Arizona and Florida have sort of sidestepped some of this because, and I think maybe it's the stigma of Common Core standards, they've renamed it.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it doesn't look all that different.
What do we call it now in Arizona?
We call it Arizona's College and Career Ready Standards. So, and it replaces the AIMS. For those people, remember the old AIMS tests and those standards. This is the new. So if people see that, they can interchange it with core standards because Arizona, Iowa, and Florida have changed the names of their standards-based program.
Yeah, and those Common Core myths that the Washington Post talked about, you just addressed that the opposition to the Common Core comes primarily from the Tea Party, and that is no longer the case. You just said that some opposition from the left as well.
Well, and we had specific opposition in the Arizona State Senate who tried to introduce a bill to stop the core standards. The business community got very agitated by that and made it very, very clear that this is something that they wanted to put in place for graduates and tomorrow's future job holders. And the governor had indicated that she would veto any appeal of the core standards. So we applaud her for that.
Yeah, the governor is a big supporter of Common Core, and according to the Arizona Republic yesterday, polling the different candidates for governor, the major Republican and Democrat candidate, all for Common Core.
Yes, that's correct.
Bob Hendricks, thank you very much for being with us. We will look forward to your visit with us in April. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is supplied by our friends at Culligan. Better water, pure and simple. Culligan, for all your year-round residential and commercial water needs. We thank Culligan, all of our in-studio guests, supplied with a nice chilled bottle of Culligan water. Coming up tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show, we will be talking with Pima County Supervisor Richard Elias. We'll then speak with the head of the Tucson Realty Association. We'll get an update on the realty situation here in Tucson. And then tax tips. That big deadline is coming up very, very soon. So Michael C. Flowers will be with us for some last-minute tax tips. Coming up tomorrow, 6 to 8, it's Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe. Then a new talk show here, a local talk show, Chris DeSimone's Daily Double. It features Chris and a different guest host every day on the show. I was on the show last Thursday, thought it went very well, and check it out. That's tomorrow from 8 to 9. On behalf of producer Rosemary Brandt, I'm Bill Buckmaster Rose, and I wish you a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.